Research has shown that lingering viral fragments after a COVID infection and lingering spike protein after a COVID injection can affect our memory, concentration, processing speed, mood, behavior. So we got fatigue, headache, and brain fog, really common after COVID, and a lasting cognitive impairment can even lead to a higher risk of Alzheimer's. However, some lifestyle modifications and treatment strategies can build a better brain. Dr. Suzanne Gazda, Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance Advisor and founder of the Neurology Institute of San Antonio, joining us now with more on this. Good morning and welcome to the National Desk.
Good morning, Jan. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for asking me to join you all this morning.
Of course, we're happy to have you. How do lingering viral fragments and vaccine spike protein from COVID impact our brain function? How does it work?
Yes, you know, I always say that the brain has taken a terrible hit since 2020, 2021, and that it is not lingering whole virus. It is lingering viral fragments that are wreaking havoc on the brain. Many, many studies have shown cognitive impairment as one of the main post-COVID side effects. And again, it is not lingering virus, it is lingering viral fragments. So this also potentially happens with people that are vaccine injured. A recent study out of New England Journal of Medicine looked at about 100,000 people, and they found a significant portion of these individuals that recovered from COVID, like you and I did, had lasting memory issues. And that's typically what we're seeing in our practice, is that these brain fog, cognitive issues, sometimes, many times, are not getting better just with the tincture of time.
Can you describe the relationship between post-COVID symptoms like fatigue, headache, brain fog, and the increased risk of Alzheimer's as well as other neurodegenerative diseases?
Yes, Jan, we really feel that there's a tsunami of neurodegenerative disease headed our way. And there are now 11 studies that correlate having had COVID to the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease quite quickly, actually within 6 months, within 12 months. We've never, ever seen this before after recovering even from a mild COVID infection. So it is more critical than ever that we focus on optimizing our brain health.
Yeah, that's frightening. What specific lifestyle modifications do you recommend?
Oh, there's so many that we can all do. First of all, change what we eat. You know, we typically eat a Western diet, which is high fat, processed food, high in sugar. So we switch to a low inflammatory diet. The FLCCC actually has a beautiful guide to eating healthy, and as well, intermittent fasting. It can be a strong component toward improving brain health. Exercise is absolutely critical for brain health, good sleep, lowering our stress, social connections, and I think love as well.
I love that. We all love love, right? So in your experience, specifically, which dietary supplements have shown the most promise in supporting brain health post-COVID, and how do they work?
Well, there's so many that we can try, but I love omega-3 fish oil. It's great for synaptic plasticity and neuronal preservation. Yes, vitamin D. We can't say enough about vitamin D and sunlight, getting out in nature, of course. Low vitamin D has been linked to low brain volumes. Magnesium, I love resveratrol, which is found in red wine. It's great for inducing a process called autophagy, reducing inflammation. And there are many others. A recent study, large study by the Cosmos Group, showed that a multivitamin with minerals every day also help reduce our risk of memory impairment. And that's quite easy to do. Quite frankly, we don't get all the nutrients we need in our diets these days, sometimes, no matter how hard we try.
Very quickly, when you're talking about building a better brain, what strategies or treatments, what's the one thing that you have found most effective in your practice?
Well, I think all of the things we just talked about, but as well, I always say don't go to bed at night without having learned three or four new things. Learn to dance, learn a new language, travel. We have to experience new activities and encourage our brain to always be learning. Even at an old age, our brain can adapt through a process called neuroplasticity.
It was fascinating to talk to you, Doctor, and we appreciate you joining us this morning. Of course, our viewers at home can continue the discussion and ask their own questions with a more in-depth discussion with FLCCC's weekly webinar. It's on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It is free. And for more details, you can go to FLCCC.net.
Yes, optimizing brain health is a very good thing, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Good evening, everyone. I'm Joyce Kamen, a member of the FLCCC Board of Directors, sitting in once more for Betsy Ashton, who, darn it, is still having a slow go of it post-eye surgery. So take a quick moment to wish her well in the chat, if you like. I can tell you that she misses you all as much as we miss her. So, Bets, looking forward to having you back in this chair soon. Hope that's a deal. So in our opening video was our own FLCCC clinical advisor, neurologist Dr. Suzanne Gazda, who was a guest on TND's news desk, talking about the effects of COVID, long vax, vaccine injury on the brain, and the ways to moderate or even disappear the symptoms. These are subjects that not very many practitioners in her specialty are willing to discuss. But putting one's head in the sand about what is happening in ever-increasing numbers to people around the world is no solution. Neither is denying that COVID or the COVID injections could have had anything to do with lingering signs of cognitive impairment, brain fog, memory loss, and neurodegenerative diseases. Tonight, we'll talk with Dr. Gazda about all of this, plus ways to moderate these symptoms and even prevent their onset. Dr. Gazda's patient practice is in Texas, and while she is booked through November of this year, good news, the doctor is in tonight for you. Place your questions in the Q&A portal for Dr. Gazda, and we will get to many of them later on in the program. Plus, Christina Moros, our nurse extraordinaire, is standing by to answer your clinical questions as well. Our discussion will be led tonight by our own FLCCC co-founder, Dr. Joe Verone, who also hails from the great state of Texas. So let's give a worldwide welcome to our guests from Texas, members of the family, Dr. Gazda and Dr. Verone. Good evening, everyone.
Hey, Joyce.
Hi, what a great introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. So I guess we should just start off with it, Joe. We talk about your practice being booked up until November. That's unbelievable. But how has the character of your practice changed since I would imagine so many other people are seeking help for the conditions we just described?
It's true, Joyce. But I would say it's not just me. Joe could probably tell you most neurologists are booked out 4 to 6 months, that there is a tsunami of neurological issues. And let me just tell you, there was a study published recently in Lancet, and it showed, the headline was increased neurological problems globally around the world, that over the last 2 decades, neurological disease has increased by almost 50%. And these numbers were before COVID, before the COVID vaccine. And you have to ask, why is there so much central nervous system, peripheral nervous system, brain neurological disease? What I fear, and I'm not trying to scare anybody tonight, because I think we have many measures to put in place to keep our brain healthy, to keep our neurological systems healthy. But if you look at the numbers, 30 to 70% of patients with long COVID, and the CDC says 1 in 5 have long COVID, that's a lot of people.
That is a lot.
30 to 70% have neurological sequelae. If you look at the vaccine injured, God only knows how many are vaccine injured, right? We don't have reliable data from our agencies, but in the vaccine injuries, 80% of patients have neurological injuries. So now we have, on top of this, what Lancet told us, that there has been this tremendous rise in neurological problems around the world. Since 2021, I believe that we're going to see, again, just tremendous numbers of patients waiting in line to get to see a neurologist. So yes, we are very busy, not without work, which I'm sure Joe is not either. And I think we're learning more every day on how to help people build a better brain.
And I really think that we need to take this into context. I remember very nicely how Suzanne mentioned this in one of our FLCC meetings. And she says that the real pandemic is about to come. I mean, we are about to come a pandemic of neurological issues. I can tell you that more than 80% of the patients that I see in the office with either long COVID or vaccine-related injuries, they have some kind of neurological issue. And the problem is that their primary care doctors, even their own neurologists, they attribute that to, oh, you are depressed, you are crazy, go and find a psychiatrist. They are all placed on serotonin antagonists. And it is sad, I mean, because these patients really come, they come to us after they have seen God knows how many patients. They come out of desperation. I have personally sent Suzanne some of the most fabulous situations that you can possibly imagine. And all of them have the same component. These are people that have been seen by multiple doctors that have not picked up on what they really have, which is spike protein related illness.
Is this all related to spike protein? All of these neurological conditions post-COVID, post-vax?
Well, I think we live in a very unhealthy world. Over the last few decades, there's more air pollution, there's more environmental toxicity. Our food in general, we'll talk about food later in the Western diet, heavily sprayed with glyphosate, other chemicals, et cetera. So, I mean, even if you just look at the rise of autism over the last few decades, I'm sure the autism community or autism kids and young adults contribute to this rise, these numbers. So I think it's multifactorial, but since COVID 2020, 2021, the neurological syndromes are being fueled, we believe, by lingering spike protein. I saw yesterday, did you see that, Joe? Was it the NIH director? And she said clearly long COVID is related to lingering virus. Clearly. Yes. They are pushing this narrative. And if you ask Bruce Patterson, right, Dr. Patterson is a virologist. He's done a tremendous amount of work in long COVID. He has the NCell DX panel where you can actually look for spike protein and all of the inflammatory cytokines. If you ask Dr. Patterson, he would say, if you want to build a house, you can't just have the bricks. And the same thing goes with the virus. If we're going to call this lingering virus, then we need to see the whole virus, not messenger RNA, not just lingering spike protein or other fragments. But I suspect what they're doing is they're building a narrative so that they will come up with antiviral treatment for long COVID. Paxlovid was tried, right, Joe, and it failed miserably in the long COVID trials.
Yeah, I mean, and it's actually worse. It actually, in some cases, it even made things worse.
Yes.
There was rebound associated with Paxlovid, correct. Right?
Correct. In the acute phase, it was clear that, you know, you gave it to patients acutely and they had the rebound. So you felt great for 5 days and then you got it again and you actually got it worse. And the second thing is that those patients have even more chances of developing long COVID, which was important. But the studies that Suzanne is alluding to are for the long COVID. And they actually, they failed very nicely. I mean, there was no evidence whatsoever that Paxlovid worked, even though we spent $11 billion on such medication.
Was Paxlovid approved under an EUA or it was outright approved by the FDA?
My understanding is it was approved under a EUA initially.
An emergency use authorization. When does that stop and the sanity start with things that really do work?
When somebody actually can get evidence to the world that, you know, some of these things that we are doing work. And, you know, it's increasingly difficult. Well, some of our colleagues think that we're a bunch of lunatics because we're trying, you know, our usual ivermectin, methylene blue, turmeric, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's it really becomes an issue. But it even goes a step forward, especially when you are thinking, like Suzanne says, you know, it's not just the spike protein, it's the environment, it's what we're eating, it's who we are nowadays. So when you start telling people, maybe you should be watching what you're eating, maybe you should be doing intermittent fasting, maybe you should be doing these things, our colleagues look at us like, what? No. We need a drug that will fix this. These things shouldn't help.
Oh, it's so true. You know, the other statistic, I know y'all say every time I speak, I scare the heck out of everybody, but we've known for a while now, the last 10 years, that the Alzheimer's incidence was increasing because people like me, the baby boomers, are in this age category now. There were a lot of people born during that time period. But, and I read recently, this is data from collected by the Alzheimer's Association, that the generation below me, like in their 40s to, let's say late 30s to 50s, 1 in 2 chance of developing dementia. 1 in 2 chance. So 50% of people listening to this podcast, this webinar, have a risk of dementia. I don't care what your genetics are, whether your mom or dad had Alzheimer's disease, but we have, and I think what we're seeing now, you know how we talk about turbo cancer?
Yes.
Turbo vascular disease. We're seeing turbo dementia. And as I mentioned on those 11 studies now, peer-reviewed studies that link COVID, mild infection, you don't have to have been hospitalized, mild infection, having had COVID and developing dementia within 6 to 12 months. Typically what we used to say when you came in with your mom or your dad that was having failing memory, we would say, we believe this probably began 10 years ago. And that slowly over time, due to a wide variety of factors, the disease now has manifest. But it's honestly, it's quite scary to watch this happen in clinical practice, to see people, sometimes even young people in their 40s, come in with complaints of brain fog and cognitive impairment, and it's not getting better. As I mentioned in that interview, we have to all wonder why. With lingering spike protein, there are multiple things going on. Of course, we worry about spike protein fueling the formation of prions, right? Amyloid, tau, alpha-synuclein, it can fuel any of them. And once prions form, it's very difficult to turn that off. Spike protein easily crosses the blood-brain barrier and causes high levels of neuroinflammation, damage to the mitochondria, vascular dysfunction, decreased cerebral blood flow, oxidative stress, et cetera, et cetera. So what the FLCCC has done brilliantly is addressed as many of those mechanisms as we understand today, so that these protocols we put together that we recommend, that's what I tell people all the time. This is not a cookbook. This is science-based medicine. And once you try this and you begin to see the improvement over and over again, you really become a believer that these things we're recommending can make a huge difference.
So the good news is that, and we have you to thank in part for it, Dr. Gazda, and members of our team, Christina, and some others who participated in this, a new brain health guide. And I cannot minimize the importance of this that is now in the stream of awareness, if you will, brings it into the stream of awareness by other practitioners such as yourself. So, you know, for example, Joe, we talked about Suzanne being booked up till November. A guide like this, and I want you to talk a little bit more about it, Dr. Gazda, but a guide like this that she has spearheaded and put together, what does that portend for other practitioners who can't get their patients into, for example, a neurologist such as Dr. Gazda? And you said it's not a recipe book. It is rigorous science, and these things do work. How does that change the culture of other practitioners who have the means now to do this?
The first thing that I would tell you is, you know, this is a light at the end of a tunnel. That's the first thing, because now you have something there that people can reach out to. And to be honest with you, Susan, you did an amazing job with the rest of the FLCC team members that helped for this. But imagine if you are able to put that guide in every household, you can prevent so many brain-related illnesses. And it sounds simple as, you know, it is. You guys were able to digest so much information and put it in a very concise and succinct I think that this is going to make a big difference. Now, I just hope that our colleagues, especially the non-believers, will at least read the guide. Read the guide and you make up your own mind. I mean, look at the science. This is scientific. This is based on science. I mean, we are using most of the things that are mentioned on the guide. I use them on my day-to-day practice, and they make a difference. Let me give you an example. I had a lady that she actually ran to be a state senator a few years ago, and she was a brilliant, absolutely brilliant lawyer. She was the fastest person to type on a BlackBerry when the BlackBerries were famous. So in any case, she gets COVID, and she says, you know, since I've got COVID, I cannot even type. I mean, she starts telling me how bad this is. I implemented some of the things that are mentioned in the guide. Within 3 weeks, she called me and says, Joe, you guys are like, this is a miracle. How I didn't do this. I've been going to these doctors and these other doctors. Says, you are a miracle. Well, I said, I'm not the miracle. Last name is Gazda, Susan. She's the one that came up with all of these things. She knows the stuff. But I'm telling you, when you see the difference in these people, says, wow, wow. Imagine this lady who had a humongous law practice that out of the blue, post-COVID, she cannot practice anymore. She cannot type on her cell phone anymore. And now she can just thank us for everything we did. It's like, I didn't do anything. I just followed the science. You know, I knew who to ask. And when I get in trouble, I called the other members of the FLCC, and clearly Susan has been outstanding in helping us out with this.
So, Suzanne, can you kind of take us through and it's online, so everyone who's watching, don't worry, we've got you. You'll be able to log on and get that link, and I know it's going to be put in the chat. So watch the chat. The link is coming into the chat. So, Suzanne, can you kind of take us through how it's organized and what to look for, and maybe stop along the way and give us some of the highlights? For example, you talked about some of the remedies and solutions to some of these issues of cognitive impairment that really run the full gamut. So give us a little preview.
Right. And I want to acknowledge this whole FLCCC team. I couldn't have done this without everybody else. The people behind the scenes that aren't getting their names mentioned, boy, I will just say in general, this was a team approach. The graphics that were created, how it was outlined, the whole document, how it got put together, extensive resource and references. And the good news, everybody, is this is just the beginning. This is step one. We'll be adding to this document for years going forward, helping people understand individual aspects of the protocol. Because actually right now we go through kind of main sections, but what I'd like to see is that eventually over time, we expand some of the sections like photobiomodulation, different types of exercise, meditation, sound therapy, music, et cetera, because we need to pull out the stops, and we need to have every resource available to us. And what I think what Joe and I see is that many of these patients are struggling financially. They've been to, as you said, Joe, many doctors. They've spent their life savings on trying this and trying that, just trying to get better. So a lot of our protocol is lifestyle modification. And, you know, people that change the diet, do the intermittent fasting, sometimes if that's all they do, 6 weeks later, 2 months later, when they come back, they're already better. So I think we find that we do as many things that are cost efficient as possible. And then the supplements can get a little bit more complicated. But what we have done in the document is listed some of my favorites. But the FLCCC, Christina had already put together a lengthy amount of information on what supplements are and which ones we should be thinking about or talking about. But I always say the supplements are going to do you very little good, except drain your wallet, if you don't do the main things first. So, we'll go through that. What I also want to mention about the cognitive impairment is sometimes it can be relatively subtle. You know, executive dysfunction basically is can't do your job anymore, just can't figure out new tasks, etc. But some people, it's more subtle memory issues. It can be a difficulty with putting words together. Language can be impaired. I mentioned this at the lecture last February that, you know, we've seen a huge rise in car accidents. And I'm not saying it's long COVID or COVID vaccine, but another subtle aspect of cognitive impairment with long COVID is we just don't have attention to detail as we used to. So again, if you don't feel like you have any brain issues, like I don't think I do yet. So you are the ideal patient to initiate this protocol. Because starting when your brain is healthy is a lot easier than starting when you're already having significant problems. And then one other thing I'll add, and then we'll go over this, the document, is we need an army of practitioners around the country, around the world, that can address this problem. I recently lectured in Austin to a group of integrative doctors, and people are hungry for this information. They're seeing it in their practices. They don't know what to do. Thankfully, most people have heard about the FLCCC, but we've got to help people. We've got to help start training clinicians that really want to help us make a difference.
Can you train clinicians in making the diagnosis and then treating accordingly if they're not a neurologist or a specialist, Joe?
I guess you can, and I'm probably the number one example, because, you know, when I had questions, when I didn't know what to do, I lifted up the phone, I called Suzanne, she gave me her little recipe as to what I need to look for, and that's what I do now on my patients, and I feel very comfortable dealing with some of these, with those issues. But the first thing is awareness. You have to be aware that you need to be looking for these things. You need to stop calling everything a psychological issue or a psychiatric issue, or, you know, you are depressed. I mean, that's the first thing we have to stop. We have to stop calling patients as being crazy. They're not crazy. They're having real illnesses. And real illnesses are just like Suzanne said, I mean, sometimes destroy families. I have seen families go completely broke because they try so many things. And be careful, because this is what I tell people. People are at the situation in which they are an easy prey. Easy prey in the sense that people can come to you and tell you, hey, I have this snake venom that is great and it's going to restore your memory. And they'll go for it, and no matter how much it costs. So some of the interventions that are mentioned in the brain guide that Suzanne spearheaded, I mean, they're simple little things. Things that are so simple, inexpensive, and why not use them first before you start going for the fancy things.
So Suzanne, you referenced the Christinas who assisted mm-hmm. on this. That's Christina Moros, our CNA, and Dr. Christina Carmen, along with other members of our FLCCC team. So I just wanted to give those two a shout out. And I know there are so many more, but you want to go through the guide a little bit?
Sure. Yes. Well, the lifestyle modifications, we start, of course, with dietary changes. And the FLCCC has a beautiful guide to eating healthy as well, how to do a intermittent fasting diet. The Western diet, right? it's such an odd name, but the Western diet is typically what most people consume. and it consists of high-fat processed food with lots of sugar. And yes, it's delicious. In Texas, we love Mexican food, right? But it's extremely unhealthy, and the Western diet has in study after study been linked to cognitive decline. There was a recent study where they looked at, this was in rats, but in a Western diet given to young rats. And what they found was damage to the hippocampus, the primary memory center of the brain. Even later on in life, when these rats were given a more healthy diet, that damage to the hippocampus could not be returned. So starting early, start with your kids, non-GMO. We've got to get away from as many chemicals as we can. Healthy food is really essential. And then, yes, Joyce, intermittent fasting. Dr. Paul Merrick has done such an amazing job putting together how to do the intermittent fasting. That is key. Dr. Mark Mattson, who was a senior scientist at the Institute of Aging, said one time, look, if we all instituted intermittent fasting in our 50s, we could delay, and Gazda says, prevent the onset of neurodegenerative disease. It's extremely powerful, resets our metabolic health, increases autophagy. We've got to get rid of spike protein somehow, some way, lowers inflammation. So intermittent fasting and healthy diet are, of course, key. Not if you're under 18, not if you're pregnant. Of course, discuss with your doctor if you have other medical problems.
Can we stop just one moment, and either one of you can answer this. I remember a couple of weeks ago, there was a study that came out and said intermittent fasting was threatening to heart health. And I remember talking to Dr. Merrick, and Dr. Merrick said, not even close. Bad study.
No, you know, that study was flawed from the very beginning. It was poorly designed. The endpoints that were looked at were wrong. I mean, it was just a terrible study. And the fact is that just as Suzanne says, I mean, that autophagy that you get with intermittent fasting, it's probably the most amazing thing that you can do, not just to get rid of the spike protein, but for so many other things. My diabetics that were on insulin for years, you know, I put them on intermittent fasting. Now they take nothing. I mean, maybe a little berberine and intermittent fasting. That's it. So intermittent fasting works, and it works like a charm.
Yeah, the intermittent fasting you just said causes autophagy.
Autophagy.
Yeah, which is the body's way of getting rid of toxins and poisons and bodily garbage, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's your trash removal system.
Trash removal.
Simple as that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Gazda, forgive me for the interruption, but continue, please.
You know, and there's other ways to increase autophagy. One is a regular meditation practice can increase autophagy. And then some of the supplements, of course, like methylene blue, resveratrol, some of the supplements within our protocol can increase this process. Sleeping, adequate sleep can actually increase this garbage removal process. So yes, we need to put in play this ancient mechanism that the human body has utilized for a long, long time. So we talked about
and people throughout a variety of different religions, you know, they've been doing this for millennia. I mean, there is a reason why this. Of course, for some of them is, you know, the religious stuff, but let's be honest, whether you are doing Ramadan or you are doing Yom Kippur, I mean, yes. I mean, it's to cleanse your body, to get that trash removal system.
Of course, true. Yes, yes. So diet, intermittent fasting, we've got those down. Exercise, we can't say enough about exercise, but the problem with this patient population is many of them can't exercise, right? They get exercise-induced fatigue, exercise-induced malaise, they have inappropriate tachycardia. These are the patients with associated POTS or dysautonomia. But in those patients, something like yoga, modified yoga class, Tai Chi, stretching can be utilized until we can increase their exercise capacity. Because what exercise does, of course, it's great for the heart, great for the brain, lowers inflammation, but it increases a chemical called BDNF. And in the document, our team, I didn't create this, they did, They tell us everything you want to know about BDNF, why it's so important that we do things to increase this neurotrophin, this factor that increases brain health. So that's what exercise does. And it doesn't have to be Orange Theory or some sort of aggressive exercise. Walking can be good. Now, when we talk, we'll dive into on the next round of exercise. I want Christina to work on this with me, but sometimes more intensive exercise can increase BDNF to a more significant degree. Dr. Rhonda Patrick is someone that I follow, and she has taught me many things about how to optimize brain health. So I encourage you to look at what we do have in the document about exercise and incorporating some steps in your world every day, if you possibly can. Then the next thing we talk about, and resistance training, is there are research studies that have showed, especially for women, that as we age, we lose muscle mass. Losing muscle mass is an increased risk factor for falls, right? We become weaker. So some sort of resistance training, we talk about that in the document as well.
Are these techniques that you're talking about good for prevention also, in addition to therapies for those with cognitive degeneration?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. They're important for all of us. Mm-hmm. And then sleep. We can't say enough about good sleep. Sleep is when the janitor comes in and cleans the school and activates something called our glymphatic system. So a good 7-8 hours of sleep per night. You don't sleep well, and you don't oxygenate your brain if you have sleep apnea. So if you snore excessively or wake up the next day excessively tired, perhaps you should have an evaluation to consider that you may have sleep apnea. So adequate sleep is extremely important. And catching up on the weekend doesn't count. It doesn't count. We need adequate, good sleep every night.
Okay.
We talk about addressing hearing loss, which has been linked to cognitive impairment. We talk about vitamin D, getting sunlight. Paul Merrick, again, has taught us this at length, how it's important to get out during the day and get natural light. Of course, we want to maintain healthy vitamin D levels because, right, we are at risk to brain volume loss when our D levels are low. In the document, we talk about social connections, that loneliness is actually a risk factor for not just depression, but cognitive impairment. And we certainly saw isolation, loneliness during the pandemic when people were forced to stay in their homes and avoid being around their families. We can certainly never let anything like that happen again.
100%.
And then we dive into various supplements. And again, the document is written in a way that's very easy to read. And people always say, well, what are your favorites? I think a multivitamin with minerals. We don't get enough nutrients, even in those of us that eat organic and eat healthy. Our food is just the way it's farmed today is depleted of so many nutrients. And Christina can talk about that at length. So a multivitamin with minerals in the COSMOS study, it was a large study that looked at this as a protective mechanism for the brain. And it's cheap, Joyce. I mean, a multivitamin with minerals is not very expensive. B vitamins, resveratrol, omega-3, methylene blue, melatonin, berberine. So many of them are listed here. And we're not suggesting that you go to the store and get on all of these, because honestly, I really do believe the supplements should be the targeted part of the protocol. You know, maybe we start with 4 or 5. And if the patient has long COVID or COVID vaccine injury, we also have to address the mitochondrial dysfunction and the vascular dysfunction. Yes.
So we're going to get to some questions here in a moment from our viewers. But I guess the big question is, people who do suffer from these post-COVID symptoms and issues, what hope is there, given what, you know, you've put out the, in terms of the cognitive issues? What hope is there that they can recover to not, maybe can they recover to their former cognition, or is there just a certain percentage of their abilities that they can retrieve from this therapy, these therapies?
Right. Well, Joe gave us an example of someone that made a significant recovery. So I do think it's possible, but it takes a lot of work. And I hope that we can have more clinicians across the country that can help and guide patients on a recovery process and protocol. Of course, we don't even need to say it, but the first advice is never get another COVID vaccine, even though the boosters are being heavily pushed at the moment. But absolutely, patients can improve. Now, if a patient has stepped into a neurodegenerative disease and has early Alzheimer's, and there are innovative ways now to diagnose that and test for that, those are the patients I always say, we don't have a moment to waste, that we've got to hit the ground running with diet, exercise, sleep, some targeted supplements. And even in those patients, I have seen significant improvement and for sure stabilization over time.
But you are correct, Susan. It's the moment you have the concern that there is a neurological issue related to this, you don't waste any time. You have to act right away. You have to start doing this. Of course, it would be ideal if all of us would go on this preventive approach. But in reality, the patients that come to you and come to me, I mean, they've been having symptoms for a long time. These symptoms have been blown away by their other healthcare providers. They said, oh, it's nothing. You are depressed. It's, you know, you are tired, whatever. But in reality, just like on that example, I saw somebody have an amazing improvement. But clearly, the improvement is directly related of how soon we start therapy. I have no question about that. Even though I've seen some amazing recoveries, I think that the sooner you start, the sooner you have a chance of getting better.
That makes
sense. The brain is mysterious as a faraway galaxy. There's still so much we don't know about the brain. We got the lungs down, Joe.
That's what I'm switching careers now. I'm going for the brain part now.
Good. We need you. We have 86 billion neurons and trillions of connections. And the brain has something really unique, and that's neuroplasticity. The brain can heal itself. Even into old age, we can continue to form new neuronal connections. And I don't like it when I hear people say that their memory is bad because they're getting older. We should have healthy, vibrant memories into our 90s, into our 100s. That should be our goal. So neuroplasticity is very capable, and we have included that in our protocol, some neuroplasticity regimens. But I always say, don't go to bed at night without learning three new things. Watching TV doesn't really count, but learn to dance, learn a new language, travel. Novelty is very, very good for the brain. But I think when we get in a routine, sometimes we need to change up that routine. In patients that have fallen into an Alzheimer land, we use other things. We use hyperbaric oxygen, which is hugely effective. And I found that to be extremely effective in many of the vaccine injured individuals. Unfortunately, it's not cheap. It's expensive. But photobiomodulation, and again, we'll be expanding on that as we go forward in the next few months.
That's great. So the Brain Health Guide just recently was put online. There are links in the chat. Please go and look at the Brain Health Guide that we've talked about tonight, brand new, from the FLCCC by Dr. Gazda, the Christinas, and others on the FLCCC team. Can we go to a couple of questions now? A few questions. We have a lot of them. So, yeah. Okay, Carrie Pine asks, do you have any recommendations for someone recently diagnosed with ALS? This is someone in my family. Symptoms started before the pandemic, but he was only diagnosed recently and he is not vaccinated.
Well, I'm so sorry that your family member is suffering. ALS is the most dreaded disease in America, probably all over the world. I hope that he's working in an ALS center. Unfortunately, there are no good pharma drugs, but Dr. Pierre Corey and I did share an integrative approach to ALS. I don't have it at my fingertips and I can't, it's quite complicated actually, but I do think there are some ways that we can address ALS outside of the pharmaceutical land, which unfortunately doesn't work that well. But it's a very difficult diagnosis. And because these patients progress and have difficulty breathing and swallowing, they definitely need to be under the care of someone that really understands this disease.
Sure.
And just as you and me were talking just before we started this, I would just caution people. A lot of people out there are calling syndromes that look like ALS, ALS, but they may be vaccine-related injuries, maybe post-COVID syndrome. Please seek good medical attention of somebody that knows about these things. I've had at least in the last 2-3 weeks, two patients that were labeled as quote-unquote ALS, that I can tell you they don't have ALS.
How is the definitive diagnosis made?
Usually by EMG, electromyogram, the neurologist clinical exam as well, but by EMG nerve conduction study.
Okay. From Galen Leary, I think I had COVID in December of 21. Only happens during sleep, but I have had ear ringing ever since. What can I do?
Well, we've seen so much tinnitus, which is the ear ringing, especially in people that have both long COVID, as well as those that received the vaccine. Actually, there are papers that have directly related the vaccine to tinnitus. And, you know, there are so many things that have been tried for this particular thing. One of them, the near infrared light. I mean, some people swear by it, but I'm sure that Suzanne knows a million other things that have been tried.
Mm. It's interesting. She said it only occurs at night.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, make sure you have an ENT evaluation. I mean, you could have high drops, just fluid in the inner ear, and it gets worse at night, and that's causes your ear to ring. Then if that's normal, then you know, maybe it's mast cell activation causing increased inflammation in the inner ear, particularly at night throughout the day, that could be addressed. But I've seen in my protocol, I have oxytocin with the love hormone. Oxytocin can be given intranasally. It can also be given orally. And I've seen oxytocin help tinnitus and sometimes taste dysfunction. So those are a few ideas, but first idea is make sure you get evaluated.
Good idea. Marilisa Thornton wants to know about her blurred vision. Could it be related to neurological issues?
Definitely. You know, I have a patient who after COVID, he's 28 years old, developed what's called visual snow. And he's been to 5 eye doctors, 2 neuro-ophthalmologists, Rosa Tang in Houston, who's my favorite neuro-ophthalmologist, and there's nothing they can do. So definitely we see a lot of visual problems after COVID. And the question is, most of the time, it's not the eye. You got to go to the eye doctor and make sure you don't have any eye pathology. But usually if it's visual snow, which basically looks like the TV that's not in focus.
Oh, wow.
It's neurological. For sure. It's high levels of neuroinflammation. And sometimes we try medications or supplements that can address neuroinflammation. In this patient, nothing worked. I tried Lamictal, I tried Keppra, I tried Tegretol, and of course I tried the FLCC protocol and the supplements. But nothing has helped him.
Okay, thank you. Patricia Rosenstein's question. In patients with new onset stroke, with a history of having the shot and natural infection and hypertension and elevated lipids, what is more likely to have caused the stroke, the cardiac history or the shot or the spike protein?
Wow, that's a great question because, you know, it can be all of the above. I mean, or it can be even worse than that. This is like the perfect storm. You have the person that has the right set of illnesses, like the hypertension, the all the other stuff, and then you put in this super size situation, which is either the shot or the vaccine, and then the next thing you know, the person has a massive stroke. I mean, and we've seen a lot of these things.
It's so true. I mean, we have to control risk factors, but unfortunately, lingering spike protein accelerates metabolic disease, hypertension, cardiovascular disease. I work with a cardiologist here in San Antonio that's very vaccine aware. And what he's beginning to see in his practice is accelerated coronary disease. You know, the patient that 2 years ago had normal coronaries, and then on repeat studies, he's having accelerated atherosclerotic disease. And we know why this happens, right, Joe? It's the vascular inflammation, lingering spike protein, endothelial dysfunction, of course, microclotting as well. So it's hard to know what's the chicken, what's the egg, but spike protein certainly, and the spike protein probably is not helpful in this situation at all.
No, I imagine not. An anonymous viewer wants to know, could you explain long COVID migraines? What causes this and any treatment options you suggest?
Yes, I have a blog on my website. It's actually two sections on headaches post-COVID. And migraines or headaches are one of the most common symptoms in long COVID and in long vax too. I believe it's high levels of neuroinflammation. It's an increase in a neurotransmitter called glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter, like the match that lights the flame. And then the other thing is spike protein shares molecular mimicry, i.e. similarity to the CGRP receptors. So essentially what's happening is the spike protein is stimulating those receptors, and that is inducing a pain response. And in the second half of my blog, SuzanneGazda.com is my personal website, I talk about potential treatments.
Excellent.
But yeah, we see probably one of the number one referrals we're getting now are people with headaches that never had them before or had them before, and now they're more difficult to manage.
All right, thank you. This is from Sadie. My unvaccinated daughter had COVID early in 2020. She was 37 years old then. Almost immediately, she was losing words and she was very aware of it. We didn't have any FLCCC recommended meds then, so her COVID was untreated. 4 years later, she is better, but believes her brain has never been the same. What protocols are you recommending to improve brain health for her?
Well, this is a perfect example of why we put this protocol together, because I'm so sorry that your daughter is suffering, but this is what we're seeing is the initial insult, word finding, now cognitive issues, neurological issues, are in many people just not getting better with the tincture of time. So I encourage you to study the brain recovery protocol in detail and look up something called the Bredesen protocol, B-R-E-D-E-S-N. Dr. Dale Bredesen is a neurologist, and a few years ago, he wrote the book, The End of Alzheimer's Disease. And essentially, a lot of the things that we're doing in our protocol are what Dr. Bredesen recommends: the diet, the intermittent fasting, some key supplements, sleep, et cetera, because these things, I believe, will help your daughter. If we are considering that this is still long COVID, we also might incorporate some things to improve vascular health, at least natokinase. Joe, any other ideas?
I mean, definitely, you know, I'm a big believer in natokinase. In some of these patients, actually, I have even used that methylene blue that I consider it to be the lubricant of the brain, and it works really well. We've had some amazing success with that, as long as you are not taking a serotonin antagonist or some other contraindication.
Yes, and one thing that Dr. Merrick wanted to add, and we did to the protocol,
is lithium, lithium orotate, which is low dose lithium. Not the lithium we give for bipolar, which is actually quite high dose, but 5 milligrams is the starting dose, very inexpensive. But lithium orotate is an amazing molecule for lowering neuroinflammation. So that's something I think that I've been using more and more lately. I'll keep you posted on what we're seeing.
We're using it as well. And, you know, I mean, to me, it was very clear, especially when Dr. Marek told us, look, you know, everybody's now drinking the nice little bottled water when that doesn't have any of the elements that you need to have. And you need lithium in your body. I mean, and we are not using lithium at the bipolar level. Okay, we're using 5 milligrams a day, lithium obligate. I've been using it on my patients, even as an extra supplement. And they tell me, hey, I'm thinking better, I'm feeling better. It's actually pretty surprising.
So is that a supplement or is that an is that need to be prescribed, the lithium?
No, it's a supplement. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on things like that, lithium orate, yeah, at 5 milligrams. We're not going over the, you know, the big doses that we give to our patients that have all kinds of disorders.
Do you both advise that someone consult their doctor before they go on any of these supplements? Or you can just sort of figure it out for yourself based on your own symptoms?
You see, the problem is that if you talk to someone, depends on your doctor, okay? I mean, you start telling your doctor, hey, you know, Dr. Varon and Dr. Gaza are suggesting that we take lithium. They're going to think you are really crazy. I mean, that's what they're going to think. But if you have a healthcare provider that, you know, understands this concept, I think that always, always, you should talk to your healthcare provider. You need to at least establish that. And ask them, I mean, if they don't believe in it, say, hey, I read this. What do you think? Mm-hmm. Be an empowered patient. Make sure that you communicate. This is important. You have to be empowered. You have to be able to communicate with the person that's going to take care of you. So I'm a big believer. I don't know about you, Suzanne, but I'm a big believer. When my patients bring me stuff, I'm more than happy. I don't get, oh, well, you shouldn't be reading it. I actually like to read it. See what they have. They may have something I don't know.
Hey, let's move on to another couple of questions. Nev James is asking, what opinion do you have on nicotine patches to restore neurological function?
I love that question. Thank you for bringing that forward. And we did not put nicotine in the document, but we'll probably follow up with some data on nicotine. There's a group on Facebook called the Renegade Research Group, and there's probably 30,000 members now. So I've been following them for a while, and it's very interesting. Nicotine, what it does is it helps detach, get spike protein off of the acetylcholine receptors. So when you block those receptors, you're affecting the vagus nerve, so more dysautonomia, but also you're affecting the formation of acetylcholine, which is the primary neurotransmitter for memory. So, and if you read all the million posts that are there now, for some people, it was the only thing that moved the needle, the only thing. But the problem with the nicotine patch is you really need to know what you're doing. And if you join that Facebook group, they have the most amazing Google Docs that tell you how to start. You start low, you take a holiday, you go back on it. So because nicotine can cause really bad gastric upset, and it can cause terrible insomnia. So if you start low, if you're going to try nicotine, start low and raise up very, very slowly. But it can be helpful, yes, especially for the dysautonomia and POTS, and sometimes for the brain fog. Nicotine is safe. There's been a study called the MIND study that's used nicotine for brain cognitive issues for 10 years now. There's been no adverse effects. It's everything else in cigarettes that is toxic and causes cancer.
Yeah, I think when people hear using nicotine as a solution for an illness, that can't be, because it has a negative connotation because of its association with cigarettes, negative health connotation, that is. Shirley Zelikovsky says she has a very sick teenager with Lyme disease and she is suicidal. I was hoping to hear if you have any suggestions. It reminds me of Brain on Fire, but I'm not sure if there's any specific protocol that would help.
Well, I have a case right now with CN, central nervous system Lyme, and I'm so sorry your daughter is suffering. There are numerous articles written about neuropsychiatric symptoms related to Lyme disease. And again, it's the formation of these autoantibodies, and it is Brain on Fire, which is the movie written about the young woman who, after college, suddenly became acutely psychotic related to autoimmune encephalitis. So, but we're also seeing, Dr. Salibi would tell you, that we're seeing a lot of reactivated Lyme post-COVID and post-COVID vaccine. So Lyme disease in general is very difficult to treat. And I hope that you are working with a Lyme literate doctor. There are many around the country. They're usually not our infectious disease doctors, but they are integrative doctors. But find someone that really knows this problem. IVIG can be very helpful, again, because this is an autoimmune encephalitis, but insurance companies are very hesitant and actually refuse to cover it for the PANS and PANDAS kids, which that, of course, is usually strep, but it can be other things like Lyme. So I think you're absolutely correct on what's going on with your daughter.
Okay. Marsha Err asks, her sister says, tells us her sister has Bell's palsy now for 3 months. She is not vaccinated. I assume it's a COVID vaccination she's referring to. The suggestion for this is your protocol, which says low dose naltrexone and steroids. Any other suggestions?
We actually have had an amazing success. And again, I'm a little biased because I have a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner working with me, my daughter. I mean, she's a traditional Chinese medicine.
Right.
But you know, I have seen amazing improvements on Bell's with acupuncture. Amazing. So again, I'm biased, but I think that it does work. I have seen it with my own eyes.
Question from my husband, Dr. Fred Wachschel, for both of you. Why, in your opinion, does mainstream medicine not mention spike protein in any publications? And we've heard you both talk tonight about spike protein being the villain in a lot of these scenarios. Why? What's the pushback? What's the problem?
We would probably need, Joyce, another 2 hours of webinar to go over this. I mean, you're getting into a situation that here is more, it has political interest, economical interest. I mean, there is so much. And a lot of that also has to be with lack of education. A lot of our colleagues are not well-versed in the concept of spike protein disease. They just don't understand it. It doesn't get into the brains.
But I would say there are a couple of articles. I can give this to Kelly later and put it in a follow-up feed. But the NIH has admitted the spike protein was the problem in, of course, it was long COVID. But you're right. We rarely see spike protein identified in research publications as the primary culprit or even in the differential.
We have a follow-up question on your answer about the nicotine patch from a friend of mine, Tom, who asks, does nicotine gum work in the same way as the patch?
Yeah, though I don't think so. If you read through the Google Docs, the recommendation would be to use the patch, not the gum, because of more continuous release.
Interesting. All right, we're about at the top of the hour. Any closing remarks on this discussion? First of all, on behalf of the entire FLCCC and probably all of our viewers too, Suzanne and Christina and Christina, this new Brain Health Guide is amazing and it is poised to help so many people. And I love the fact that this is, you know, in the spirit of every other protocol, every other health guide that we have, and that is, it is all rooted in robust science. And that's what the FLCCC has always been about. Joe, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I want the viewers to always be aware that, you know, anything that we discuss in these forums, in the people that we're surrounded by, everything is based on science. Yes, there are some anecdotal reports, like I've told you, I mean, I've seen this and that, but at the end of the day, it's based on science. And I urge you, all the viewers that are seeing us, say, go to our website, look at what's going on in there. We're constantly modifying the website. We're constantly coming up with new guys like the Brain Guy, that the Christinas and Suzanne were really nicely did. I mean, it's an amazing resource. Please use the resources. That's what they're there for. And they're going to help a lot of people. We started the FLCCC as a let's go ahead and help each other and find a way to help out with COVID. But now we're way beyond just COVID. So I think that that's the most important part.
Yeah. I mean, along the way, as you know, Joe and Suzanne, we discovered a fatally fractured, if you will, healthcare system. And, you know, here's this was once tiny organization, no more, is really focused on a healthcare revolution to develop the kind of healthcare system that people across the globe deserve.
It's so such an honor to be part of the FLCCC, and I thank everybody for being part of this community. You know, being in practice for almost 30 years, I would say one thing that's lost is the heart and soul of medicine. And what I see, another thing that the FLCCC is doing is we're bringing the heart and soul back to medicine. There's a quote I love, and it was the patient that asked the doctor, well, doctor, what can I do so I can get better? And he said, you need to love. And the patient said, well, what if that doesn't work? He said, you need to increase the dose. Hmm. So thank you to the FLCCC for the love in this community. We feel it at the conferences, and it's just spectacular.
I do have to say that what you just described, Suzanne, and yourself included, this is a team, and not just the working team every day, but all of those people who come into our space seem to be similarly sort of situated, and that is a love of humanity and the desire to bring humanity a much increased level of quality of life through quality of health. And that's what we are all about. And I can't thank you both enough for being here tonight. Our co-founder, Dr. Joe Verrone, it's always a pleasure to be with you, as it is you, Suzanne. And thank you so much, both of you, for being here tonight. And we're going to talk a little bit about your Brain Health Guide with Christina Morris and Christina Carmen, a couple of announcements, and then we'll say goodnight. We are so glad all of you were able to join us tonight for this really, really important discussion. And as we mentioned tonight, over and over, the new Brain Guide, now available on our website. It is, as you know, so packed with great info, treatment options, so much more. Head over to the link on the screen or use the QR code. You can scan that right now for a moment. Please make sure to share this guide, not only with family and friends, but with your doctors. It is critically important, please. Now we have an addendum to that, our Brain and Mental Health Guide. This is focusing on the impacts of mental health and what we can do to take control of our own life to improve brain health, improve our lifestyle, and to feel better in all ways. You can find it and many other guides on our website under the Tools and Guides tab, or again, use the link or QR code on the screen. These doctors, Dr. Verrone, Dr. Gazda, and so many, many others in the FLCCC space are always busy and working really tirelessly to help educate fellow practitioners, as well as to see their ever-growing and seemingly endless lists of patients. So Dr. Gazda and Dr. Verrone both spoke at February's Healthcare Revolution Conference in Phoenix. They gave there's no words that I can use to aptly describe how incredible their presentations were. you can see them both. Dr. Gazda and Dr. Barone's lectures are on now on our Education on Demand platform, as well as many other presentations, panel discussions, and Q&As. You can learn more or watch today at flccc.net/EOD. Now, there's another amazing presenter for our past conference, always amazing, from all, he's been at all three conferences, that's true. The wonderful Dr. J.P. Salibi. He has a brand new episode of Whole Body Health out now. In it, Dr. Salibi discusses TNFA inhibitors and monoclonal antibodies as treatments for some autoimmune diseases. He also shares concerns about the newness of some monoclonal antibodies and potential side effects. So you can watch it now on our FLCCC Alliance Rumble and Odyssey channels and on our website using the link on the screen. Okay, folks, these adorable photos came to us from one of our lovely team members here at the FLCCC, and we just love that they show some of our youngest FLCCC family members in full FLCCC family hats and gear. You can find these and more and dress up all the members of your household. Don't you love the hat on the dog? I'm loving the hat on the dog. Visit our online store at supportflccc.store. And make sure to use the code LETDOCTORSBEDOCTORS at checkout to receive 10% off of your order. And now, without further ado, the aforementioned Christina Moros, one of the co-authors with Dr. Gazda on that new brain health guide. This is such an exciting night, Christina, to debut that health guide. I know you guys worked so hard on it. How do you feel about this premiere night?
Super proud, but I also want to mention that my colleague Pei Harris played a huge role.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, I forgot to mention Pei.
I just want to make sure she gets credit for helping get all the research together to help back all that fantastic information. And then Zara helped you know, get this guide together as well. So I just want to make sure they get credit in creating this lovely document.
But it's Zara Sethna, our Senior Director of Communications, and Pei Harris, our researcher. Two invaluable employees and parts of the FLCCC Alliance team.
And this guide is just fantastic because it's just such a holistic approach to preventing disease and also treating disease. And I just love the way that Dr. Gazda pulls all that together in this guide. It's just, it really gives everything the proper exposure to give people the options to go and find things that work for them, because not everything works for everybody.
Yes, I love that. I love that. It's really a remarkable achievement. And as she said, there's going to be addendums to the guide, more information coming, and rather soon, like in the next couple of months.
Yes. And we also have that brain and mental health guide kind of ties a bunch of information together about depression and about brain health. And we have other guides coming in the pipeline for helping with adjunctive therapies like mindfulness and alternative movement therapy and fitness, just all sorts of complements to this guide to help people get a start to having a better, healthy routine for their lives.
So this is kind of, in my mind, what distinguishes the FLCCC from so many other platforms, because it really is a wholeness approach, if you will. Holistic, yes, but the whole body, the whole spirit, the whole mind, everything. And it's you know, it's so well considered that this is brought, and all of the, not to mention all of the science behind it. So just an incredible job, you guys. I'm just proud of you, proud of this team, and just keep the movement going. It's amazing. So just briefly about tonight, lots of activity.
We had so many questions. I'm proud to say I answered 60 out of 84 questions tonight.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty busy.
You get the medal of the night. That's some hard work.
Oh, now everyone gets a medal.
Yeah, that's true. You get a medal. Thank you so much, Christina. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Joyce.
Finally, we could not do this, any of this, and we're serious about it, without you. So thank you so much. And we will see you same next week, same time, same place. But first, Elaine is going to tell us the story of remdesivir versus ivermectin. Can you guess what cured her in 24 hours of COVID? We'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
Hi, my name is Elaine, and I live in Northwest Colorado, and I'd like to give you my experience of what happened to me during the COVID times. The doctor in the emergency room basically, you know, after running tests and stuff, told me that I had COVID pneumonia. Well, he just kind of sent me home, and I'm a nurse, so I thought to myself, I wonder what my labs were. And so I called up and I eventually got my labs from the hospital. And when I opened it, I read critically low white blood cell count. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. And as bad as I felt, I had my husband drive me into Utah to a hospital over there. Well, they admitted me and they gave me my first dose of remdesivir. I had my second day, I had my third dose, and my heart, my lungs were feeling terrible. And it's like they were just getting worse. And I noticed, being a nurse, my urine color went from the yellow to a light brown to a chocolate brown. And I was very concerned about that because I, as a nurse, I know kidney problems. So when the doctor came in, I said, you know, I told him those symptoms. Don't worry about it. We're watching your kidney function tests, you know, and I'm like, I'm not liking this at all. So I got online after he left and I looked up remdesivir to try to figure out, you know, what is it? What does it do? You know, information on it. So after I read this, I'm like, I am not taking any more of this. So when they brought me the next dose, I refused the dose, said, no, I'm not going to take any more. So the doctor comes in and I explained to him that I'm not going to take any more. He was very unhappy with me and I said to him, but I would take ivermectin. And he goes, you know damn good and well, I can't give you that from this hospital. And I said, okay, well, I think you need to discharge me. But the next day, the doctor came in, and he came in very sober-minded. I was kind of surprised. But he came in and he told me, he said, Elaine, I owe you a great big apology. And then I went home. I got on FLCC.net. I love these people. Because I had already been on there, you know, for some time watching stuff. And I tell you, 24 hours after I took my doses of ivermectin, my lungs were perfect. So it's a good story.
Your stories are powerful. They change hearts and minds. Share yours today. Send it in to mystory@flccc.net.